Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haugh, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball like we do every Saturday morning. Today, wondering, why are the Cubs in last place, and when the White Sox rummage sale will begin? Good morning, Bruce. How are things?
David, come on. It's not all doom and gloom. It's baseball. It's June. Father's Day weekend.
Yes, it
is. Graduations.
Right.
Which you celebrated with your family recently.
Yes.
Now 90-degree weather we're looking at this week. It's summer, you know?
Oh, it's great summer. You know, there's few better places to be than Chicago in the summertime. That's a very different conversation. But, Bruce.
I guess you're right, David. We're looking for the offenses of the Chicago baseball teams
that have been
offensive. Hard to watch.
Yes,
it's kind of, see, you know, you've been in the Midwest your whole life. I'm Chicago my whole life. You've been in Chicago for a million years. We're used to seeing runs scored. Okay, we're used to losing sometimes, but not having runs scored is a totally different animal. And that's a difficult process I have as a fan as opposed to a media person. You know, a media person watches, observes, and then we report on what we have. Now, with not scoring runs, the baseball fan in me goes, sometimes this is impossible to watch. It's hard to watch because it's so boring. All right.
Well, it is, yeah.
That's tough.
Cubs are boring. The White Sox are what they are. Both are in last place as we sit here on June 15th. We've got a good show anyway. That should be our new motto for Inside the Clubhouse. Listen to us anyway, because both teams are in last place. Bruce, we have Justin Steele at the bottom of the hour. Scott Podsednik from NBC Sports Chicago and of White Sox lore joins us at 10 o'clock. And in between, we'll talk about the White Sox and the Cubs and where they are and why they're there. Also, your calls and texts, 312-644-6767. Bruce, let's start here, because I want to know what you think of this, because you've got to start somewhere. The Cubs just might be who they – this might be who they are, and that is an underachieving offensive group with good starting pitching and a bad bullpen. They are one of six last-place teams as we sit here this morning on June 15th. They are the last-place team with the highest payroll at $230 million, give or take a couple million here or there amongst friends. Bruce, to me, that makes the Cubs right now as we speak the most disappointing team in baseball. They are getting the worst return on their investment of any team in the league. There are reasons for that. We will go through them and sift through the rubble. But the Cubs are the most disappointing team in baseball today.
David Downer, wow. I mean, listen to you. Listen. The Cubs are two games out of the wild card.
Okay.
They might be in last place in this, what you call, division. I don't call these divisions really much of anything other than an opportunity to get into the playoffs now, because when you're playing 52 games after this weekend, the Cubs will have completed half of their division games. They don't play the Cardinals or the Brewers again after August 1st. They play six games in their division in September. So it's an opportunity to get in the playoffs is the way I look at when I look at divisions and where teams are at. So the Cubs are two games away. The Cardinals, all of a sudden, you know, they're the glory of the division outside of Milwaukee. They just hit .500. So let's get some reality into
okay.
the conversation, right?
Bruce, okay. I am all for perspective. What I did at the beginning was just kind of vent, all right? I think that from a frustration standpoint, you can understand why Cub fans feel the way that I just sounded, because they're fed up with getting shut out and getting three measly hits 2 days in a row. And, you know, on Thursday night, they bunted three times in a row. Yesterday, they were complaining about the wind blowing in. Sometimes that benefits you, Cubs, you know? So I don't want to hear that. All right, now I take a deep breath. And you're right, Bruce. They are two games out of the wild card spot. If you're Jed Hoyer, you're looking at this and you're waiting for somebody to step forward and say, all right, I'm going to be better than the back of my baseball card, or I'm just going to live up to what my expectations are. And I think you're going to try to ride this out and see where you are in about a month, and then determine how aggressive you're going to be before the deadline arrives.
Yeah, I would like them to try to be more aggressive before the month is out. And you're right. Your information is correct, David. He did say it's going to be about a month before they're going to be able to react. But, you know, my intel out there is that they're you know, they have their scouts out there. They're looking at hitters. They're looking at people for the end of the bullpen. Hoyer did pull the trigger, getting Candelario at the end of the July last year. They went and got another bullpen guy, and Jose
Quas,
right, mm-hmm. who's in the minor leagues right now. So they did make some moves. It wasn't quite enough, but, you know, they did finish a game out of the wild card. This year, I expect similar type of conversations going on here. They're at $231 million as far as their luxury tax number is. That's about $6 million away from paying a tax. Paying a tax this year, I'm sure fans don't care much about that at all. That's just part of what the Cubs have to look at here. But, David, they do have to shake things up. I do think in most years you say adding one hitter won't change much. I think in this year, with runs scoring being so difficult, I think adding one impact hitter would be a big deal for this lineup.
I do too, and you're going to have to take some chances. I don't know if they're going to do it just yet, as you described. But let's look at what the context is as we sit here this morning. You were out there on Friday. The Cubs are dealing, as much as their offensive problems continue to plague them, they've got a bullpen that's banged up and a pitching staff that's compromised. Jordan Wicks leaves the game on Friday, an oblique strain. Ben Brown, the situation is getting worse because it is a rare condition now. They don't know when he will come back. Hayden Wesneski has given up a home run in five of his last nine outings. Bruce, suddenly the pitching staff seems to be in shambles. The starters, or the rotation, which has been the strength of this team, now is getting pieced together. What can you tell us about the future of Kyle Hendricks as it pertains to the rotation and where the Cubs are in terms of their bullpen and pitching?
Kyle Hendricks, being the pro he was, went out there and saved the bullpen. I know fans are tired of hearing that about pitchers coming in and pitching big middle innings, but he threw four important innings after Wicks went out yesterday, and he will most likely go into the rotation in that spot where he pitched yesterday. And again, having somebody like Kyle Hendricks, who everybody couldn't wait to push out and say that he was done a couple weeks ago, now he looks like, whoa, we're sure glad that we have a pro like Kyle Hendricks around to get in there and start in some games where, you know, with Brown down, with Wicks down, with, you know, the rotation, you know, falling apart a little bit injury-wise, it's really good that you have to say one thing about Hoyer, which is really, really positive. If you're not feeling good about the Cubs or the front office, think about this. The one thing he said from the winter on into spring training in the beginning of the year is, we feel we have rotation depth and we're going to need it, okay? We're going to need it because of injury. We're going to need it because people won't live up to what they are expected to do. And sure enough, we're not even halfway through the season, and they've needed just about every pitcher that they have in the organization. Horton was supposed to be around right now. We had talked about it for the last 6 or 7 months, David, that Horton would be expected here. He's injured. He's not going to be able to throw a ball for another few weeks. So they're really up against it right now. But I really give Hoyer and Hawkins credit for that depth in the pitching rotation, which we know, regardless of run scoring problems or bullpen problems, starting pitching is king, and they have been able to survive up until now.
And you know that Kyle Hendricks was a guy that, going to the bullpen, raised some questions. He's answered them. The last 8 2/3 innings in relief, he has been scoreless. And this is why Craig Counsell sounded this is how Craig Counsell sounded yesterday, talking about Hendricks going back in the rotation.
I think we've got it. We'll take a look and see where we're at. But we're down pitchers right now. I mean, you lose two guys within 4 days. You know, and Kyle, the fact that he, you know, threw a bunch of innings today and is not going to be available for a while. You know, we'll see where we're at when we get there, but I think it looks like it.
Show to goes today, 1:20 start, 12:45 pregame right here on the Score. So, Bruce, Kyle Hendricks suddenly is a source of stability. This situation with the Cubs young pitchers is concerning because of Ben Brown's situation and Jordan Wicks. Any hope that either one of those guys will be back sooner rather than later? What's the latest that you heard on them?
Well, you know, Wicks is, you know, if it's a oblique and he's going to have the imaging done today, it's at least a month, okay? There's nobody coming back from obliques less than a month. Not because they're not feeling better or able to do things, but because of being able to re-injure it, okay? So this is, he's had an oblique before. This is really disappointing for him and the team because he was just rounding into shape from his last injury. And with Brown, you know, we don't know what this stress reaction is. It's not a fracture, but we're not quite sure exactly the timeline on something like this for the Cubs. So, you know, every man up right now, David. And if you want to get your arm ready and start loosening up again, I know you – you were a pretty good high school pitcher, so, you know, let's go.
They aren't that desperate yet, Bruce. Let's look at the White Sox because they were losers last night as well, the other last-place team in town. And the Sox certainly had an odd week, Bruce, because they had two walk-off losses. They are in a situation where, you know, when they lose 7-1 to the Diamondbacks as they did, you don't really do anything but shrug. But there were some signs of encouragement. You had Drew Thorpe making his debut in Seattle, and I think there was a lot to like there. You had Jonathan Cannon looking like a major league starter. He's going to be inconsistent, but he does look the part. And then there's Garrett Crochet, who looks as dominant as any left-handed starter. The only other left-handed starter that looks as dominant as Garrett Crochet right now is Chris Sale for the Braves in the NL. A lot of conversations surrounding what the future of Garrett Crochet will hold. Bruce, how would you assess that in the context of the White Sox season?
I don't think Crochet is being traded, okay? There's just so many variables that say no. First of all, what you said is right. Crochet, even though he has no innings build up in his career, he only had 79 or 74 going into this season from a career, you know, that was interrupted with Tommy John starting in 2020 in the bullpen. This guy has a clean delivery. This guy is dominant. He's confident. This guy can be one of the very best pitchers in baseball. He has been that from the beginning of the year now. And can you imagine, you know, an all-star game with Crochet and Sale starting against each other? You know, that would be painful. but the reality is that the other variable on Crochet is they're going to have to start limiting his innings. Anybody that trades for him is going to have to give up really top quality players and not use him totally toward the end of the year. You know, the unknown territory of innings pitch. That said, I think it's more likely that he doesn't get traded. But I did talk to Crochet earlier in the week,
and he talked about the reality of the speculation and how he would view it and how it might affect him. This is what Garrett Crochet had to say about the trade speculation surrounding him.
I think that no matter which way you look at it, it means that I've been throwing the ball well. So I just got to keep doing that. You know, all I'm focusing on is every fifth day, giving the team a chance to win. And, you know, from there on, I can't, like you said, I can't control that. I don't really like to factor in the human element until the offseason. Like right now, it's I'm going through my routine. You know, I'm doing my job as best as I can. I'm not really worried about, the semantics of it all. Like, I'm kind of just doing my thing.
Bruce, I said this Friday morning, and I believe it even more that when you hear it from Garrett Crochet, the White Sox and Chris Getz have to be open for business and listening to every offer for every player. There are no untouchables when you're as bad as they are. That said, the price for Garrett Crochet would have to be exorbitant. I would make sure that you're getting the clearly a better end of the deal, because I don't think I would trade him. I would keep him. He has got ace stuff. You drafted him. You're developing him. And regardless of how good you are around him, he can star, and he can be one of the best pitchers in the American League. I would be more inclined, because of the contractual realities and other things, to keep him.
Well, believe it or not, he might be the young leader on your staff for the next 3 or 4 years. And that's how you kind of look at him. He has those abilities. You and I have had him on the show before. Even though he doesn't have a ton of time in the major leagues, he's got leadership ability. I'm in that clubhouse all the time watching him. There's a ton of activity around his locker with other players coming there with him. Positivity, fun with the other guys. So even though he has little experience, he's got a tremendous amount of upside. And for the fans as well, to be able to have a dominant pitcher, if you look at their last, and this is off the top of my head, I should have better numbers, but the last 4 or 5 wins that the White Sox have, I think he's won at least 3 of those games, okay? So it's win day for the White Sox when Crochet goes out there. There's that great opportunity. That's a big deal, that you have to start somewhere. You can't just trade everybody away. And I think it's a good starting spot for Crochet to stay in that rotation for the White Sox.
Real quick, Bruce, how surprised were you that they sent down Jordan Leisure, a guy who at the beginning of the season showed a lot of promise and had emerged as a power arm in high-leverage situations? He goes back to Charlotte because of some inconsistency.
You're sending your kid to summer camp, okay? They're resting him, okay? This is their only way to rest him from high leverage situations, by sending him to the minor leagues. He had the most appearances of any bullpen guy for the White Sox. This is not exactly how you wanted it to go when he was on a pace for 70 or 75 appearances in a bullpen. You don't want that arm blown out. So what Getz did was send him to the minor leagues, back him off a little bit, get him a little R&R down there, probably come back, I'm guessing, around the All-Star break. But again, Grafal's situation is to build these guys up, make them earn their way in the big leagues, and also at the same time, you have to protect their futures, and that's the charge for Getz in the front office.
Eric Fetty goes for the Sox tonight out in Arizona, a late start, 9-10 against the Diamondbacks. Bruce, also in the news on Friday, the Houston Astros released Jose Abreu, still owing him $30 million. Wow, that's a lot of money, and that's a huge drop-off for a former MVP that Chicago knows well. I want to ask you 2 questions in relation to that. Number one, if the Astros can eat $30 million on a guy who can't hit his weight, why are the White Sox holding on to Martin Maldonado? And secondly, do you think Abreu has anything left to give him a shot if you want to take a flyer on a power hitter?
Wow. You hit me with a lot there. I would just say...
You're capable, Bruce.
I would say Abreu's career is over. Okay. That he's probably older than the years that we think he is, and that he's... should be admired as one of the great White Sox hitters of all time. And that's how he should be looked at. Nobody tried harder, played harder, gave more, was more thankful. What a pleasure to cover this guy and watch him as a professional. I think it's over. Will he try somewhere else? I don't know. What was your other question? Is he the best hitter Cubs or White Sox?
The Astros can eat $30 million, why are the White Sox not willing to eat 4 to get rid of Maldonado?
It's a different team. You know, it's a different perspective. Certainly you're seeing Lee come around and catch most of the games now, right? Aren't you okay with that?
Well, I'm better with that, but I think it is It is a baseball decision by a major league team that's willing to eat some money. That's a lot of money to eat.
Maldonado was brought along for one reason and one reason only. His specialty was handling pitching staffs, calling the right pitches, being a professional behind the plate and handling it. He's never been a really good hitter. He's a much worse hitter right now than that. But he was never brought in here to be catch 100 baseball games. I don't think, you know, that's not where he's at as part of his career right now. He could still go to another team. If he gets released by the White Sox, another team's going to pick him up just for the same reasons, David.
Score Listener Line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start the conversation with Marty in Indiana. Marty, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you this morning?
Thank you. You know, I listen to you guys every Saturday, Molly and Hall almost every morning. But I think you guys have a great show. But I'm listening to all these Cub fans panicking, fire Hoyer, trade this, trade that. It's all bullshit. Oh, excuse my language. It's all nonsense. If you compare the records from last year at this time, they were 33-37 after 70 games. There's a lot more statistics that this guy found that I posted on Facebook to show people. But this is the exact same outcome that you had last year at this time. Almost identical. I think there's 9 runs difference in run scored total, and of course the slugging is down, and Girardi was right because you do need more slugging. There are certain players that I take exception with that I think need to be moved. And I know this might upset Mr. Hall because he's a diehard apologist for Ian Happ. I'm sorry, Mr. Hall, but you do the same thing you did with Justin Fields. You try to keep him in the game as long as you can because you think he's good. He's not. If you look at his record the last 3 or 4 years, he's always had half the season, which is bad. He's also been sent down on an option, if I remember correctly. Then you got Christopher Morel, that I hear everybody screaming about. He's so good. He has his many home runs. The guy is down by the Mendoza line. How long are you going to keep playing this guy? Danzy Swanson? I don't know what happened there.
Fair questions, Marty. A lot of guys underachieving. Bruce, can the 2024 Cubs make the same kind of resurgent charge that the 2023 Cubs did?
Well, you know, there was that 10-game winning streak that they went on in the middle of the year when they were down. But the last time, David, that the Cubs were 4 games under 500 was July 22nd of last year. Okay. So, if you want to compare years and records, the Cubs are pretty much where they're at. And the division or the National League is much worse. Okay. You have 8 teams within 3 games of the last wild card, okay? 8.
Right.
All right.
Right.
So the whole league, except for 2 teams, is within the wild card. There's a lot of baseball to be played. Is that good news? I mean, I don't know if that's good news or not, because I think you concern yourself with the club that you root for. Are they going to get better? It's not about are they going to be the best of a mediocre group. I don't think that's what you look at. I think you look at it and say, have they underperformed? Yes. Can they get better? I think the answer is yes. Do they need help in both the lineup and in the bullpen? Yes. So if everybody does their job, including Jed Hoyer and the players, I think there's a very reasonable idea that the Cubs are going to be there at the end challenging for a wild card.
I actually agree with you, Bruce. I believe that as well. And I would just like to accept Marty's criticism with a slight correction. So, not to sound defensive, but my weak apologist take is not defending Ian Happ as much as maybe Dansby Swanson. So, if I have been an apologist for anybody, let's get the right Cub. It has not been Ian Happ. It's been more Dansby Swanson.
I don't think the one thing that's interesting about the Cub locker room, they're as upset as the fans are, okay? They're not happy with the way they're playing baseball. They know that there's better performance inside of them. Are they panicking? I don't think so. Are they grinding to the point where they're trying to do too much sometimes? I think so. I think we're watching that. Little things, including defense has been something that has been a glaring,
terrible,
a glaring problem for the Chicago Cubs this year.
Yeah. You can't have those kind of mistakes at third. But Patrick Wisdom the other day.
Too many one-run games, David.
Yeah,
too many one-run games.
Too many blown saves, up to 15. Too many. There's too many categories that they have fallen short in. All right, we need to break, Bruce, because we have a special guest coming up when we return. Justin Steele, the Cubs ace, and he's been looking like it lately, will come back and talk to Justin Steele of the Cubs inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
There's the 1-2, a swing and a miss, strike three. Justin Steele mowing down the Rays. That is his sixth strikeout of the game.
As a pitcher, you can only control the controllable, and that's what I try to do out there, and just give my team a good chance to win when I am out there.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine, here until 11 o'clock, and it is a pleasure now to bring in our next guest. You heard him there. His name is Justin Steele, and he joins us on the Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good morning. How are y'all doing? Thanks for having me.
We're doing well. It's a pleasure. Appreciate you getting up and joining us. Let's start with your season. It obviously hasn't started the way that you have wanted it to. How have you maintained your perspective, and what is your mindset as we sit here today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, going down with a hamstring injury the first start of the year, opening day, all the excitement around that's obviously not ideal in how you want to start the season and everything. But, you know, me and the rehab team, trainers and everybody attacked the rehab process pretty relentlessly and kept throwing throughout the process, kept my arm moving so the build-up process wouldn't take that long so I could get right back in the games. And, yeah, once I got back in the games, just kind of had to get my feet back under me, get my innings built back up, and I kind of feel like I'm getting into that, like, mid-season group now.
Justin, I'd like you to explain the dynamic in a clubhouse between players because, you know, I've been doing this a long time and watched it, but coming from a player, it has a little bit more punch. When things aren't going the way a team wants it to, but a certain part of the team, like the starting rotation, has been the dominant part of this team for the first 70 games. How does that work where you pick each other up, even though certain parts of the team, like the defense at times, like the offense a lot lately, isn't doing what they want to do? How do you as a starting pitcher and the other starting pitchers and pitching staff pick each other up in the clubhouse as support of each other?
Yeah, I think what remains the most important thing is, like, everybody just kind of shows up each and every single day, regardless of what they did the day before, and just showing up each and every single day, doing what you're supposed to do that day, you know, prepare for the game, get ready for the game, and, you know, you play the way you're supposed to play and everything. And, you know, the game evens itself out. There's going to be days where the starting rotation doesn't, you know, necessarily do what it wants to do, and the offense or the bullpen picks it up in some capacity. And that's just kind of the way baseball goes. And, you know, right now I just think everybody is still showing up. You know, the camaraderie in the locker room is fine. It's nothing like that. It's just, you know, one of them things. Baseball happens. It's a hard game. And like I said, you know, everyone's showing up, doing what they're supposed to do each day, and, you know, tides will turn.
Joined by Cubs ace Justin Steele here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Justin, I've been kind of curious about how you've approached your conditioning in this very unusual season for you, because you mentioned the injury on opening night, and it's a hamstring injury. So that puts you down, and you're coming back. Your arm feels great, but you also are not going to be in the same type of condition you might be normally. How challenging has that been coming back, and where are you right now in terms of that?
Yeah, I would say I'm full go at this point, but definitely coming back, I wasn't able to do the running that I normally would do. I had to transition over to, like, the bike and different mobilities and modalities and whatnot. So I spent a lot of time on the bike in the training room. Been doing stuff in the pool to kind of not put as much stress on my knees and hamstrings as running does. So I've been in the pool doing different exercises and stuff. But, yeah, at this point I'm back to, like, 100%. I was back to 100% with my hamstrings before I went off my rehab assignment. So I've been back running and doing everything I'm supposed to be doing now.
Did any of your pool time include time with Shota, who tends to like the hotel pool from the way we understand it?
Yes. I the pool here in our training facility is a little small for two people, but I wouldn't be opposed.
Justin Steele joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. He's David Haugh and Bruce Levine. Every Saturday, 50 to 52 weeks out of the year, depending on what type of football is going on in the city of Chicago. And Justin, we talk about you being the young ace of the staff. You've been in this organization as long as anybody this side of Kyle Hendricks. I think you might have been there even longer. You're still only 28 years old. It's pretty amazing what you have seen and your perspective. So I'm going to ask your perspective of where the Cubs are at as an organization. I know you're only a player, and that's what you're supposed to be. That's your job. But you've had as good a view as this organization and its health for the last 10 years. What's your thoughts on where this organization is at?
I think as an organization, it's in a very good spot. Obviously, everyone kind of knows that the minor league system's ranked pretty highly right now. And I would say not even to the extent of, like, how high it's ranked. And, like, I would say a lot of that is, you know, we got some really good position players down there and stuff. But I would say around 2020, 2021, around the time I was started getting into the big leagues, there seemed to be a shift in the organization as far as developing pitchers go. And, you know, you started seeing guys like me, Abbott, Wicks, you know, with Nesky, different guys from our own farm system starting to get into the big leagues more often and having a bigger impact. So I think that development's been really huge for, you know, not obviously myself, but just like the Chicago Cubs as an organization as a whole, just being able to, consistently pump out, you know, farm system arms, you know, not always have to trade for them, different things like that. And obviously, it's, all of that's above my pay grade and everything, but you know, I just feel like around that time, you know, we started pumping out arms at a higher consistent rate.
You know, Justin, we routinely refer to you as the Cubs ace. We saw last season, and you earned that designation. And we saw the stuff that still exists, six scoreless the other night. You don't get a decision. And because we're sitting here on June 15th, and you still are without a victory, it seems maybe unusual to refer to you as the ace, but there you are. It changes the way, I think, obviously, numbers don't mean what they used to, but does it matter to you? How do you explain it? And because it is somewhat unusual, here we are, June 15th, and you're still searching for your first victory.
I mean, yeah, obviously I want to get wins because that ultimately means we won the game. So, like, that's what's most important, not to just me, but everyone on the team. We just want to get wins. But obviously if I record a win, it means we get one. So, for me, I just like to control the controllable, do what I can to help my team win the game. And, you know, obviously every time I take the mound, I want to go 9 innings and, you know, do everything possible to win the game. But, you know, every game is different. Every situation is different and stuff. So I just try to control the controllable, do what I can to help the team win that day.
Is it possible, and I don't know if it is, to have more respect and admiration for a guy like Kyle Hendricks now than people did a month ago, watching him go those 4 innings yesterday after Wicks got hurt, going into a bullpen after being an ace of a staff, a guy that was on the mound for a championship for the Chicago Cubs after 108 years. How would you define your thoughts on Kyle Hendricks from the past and right now?
I mean, one word, just like professor. I mean, he's just a brilliant mind amongst, like, baseball. Everyone that comes in the clubhouse, players, staff, they leave conversations better when talking to him, whether it's talking about baseball or life. He's just a great person, great human being. And I just had the utmost respect for him. You know, just from the time I came into the big leagues, he kind of took me under his wing, always answered my questions, always talked to me in the dugout, was always very nice, always outgoing. And it's kind of odd, like, you see him on the field, like, emotionless, doesn't say anything, but in the dugout, he's actually talking to everybody, always talking to pitchers, especially young guys, always trying to uplift everybody. And it's just awesome to see, especially with everything that's going on and whatnot, and just he's showing up being the same guy. And it's just a testament to the kind of person and the the human being that is Kyle Hendricks.
So, Justin, before we let you go, obviously the numbers are similar to where the Cubs were about a year ago, and it feels kind of like a similar, you're kind of a waiting phase. You're kind of, okay, when is this going to take off? When are things going to start to turn around? How would you compare the two situations, and what can you give the Cub fan in terms of hope that this will be turning around soon?
I mean, the way I keep looking at it is, I think I saw something the other day where, like, at the same record as we were last year at this point, and then I believe we ended up going on a run, ended up making a move at the trade deadline, different things. So, and I feel like this team is better than the team last year. You know, we made some additions, a lot of the same pieces, and then a few good additions. So on paper, it's a better team, in my opinion. So I would just, you know, hold optimism. I think everything's going to turn around. I mean, we got a good ball club in there.
Justin, last one from me, and David and I appreciate your time for sure today, and always in the clubhouse. You know, such a gentleman and such a great place to come for me and the other reporters. When you look at the Craig Counsell factor, what have you learned from him, especially during times of adversity now where games have been hard to win and runs have been hard to come by?
Yeah, I mean, he's just very upfront, honest, blunt. He's, you know, and there's something to learn from that. I appreciate that. You know, I like that, especially in a manager and everything. And, you know, I think he's doing a great job with everything that's going on. And, you know, I feel like we're in a good position. We got the right guy leading us. Something I admire and notice is he's always prepared for, like, any situation possible that could come up in a game, whether we're up 10, down. Like, I feel like he's already played every single scenario out in his mind, and he already knows the proper move to make. And just watching that from a distance has been really cool.
How's the podcast going?
It's going great. I've really been enjoying it. Something I've, like, been looking forward to doing. So that's kind of been really fun for me. I've really been enjoying it.
Is Caleb Williams the real deal?
We'll see. We'll see.
Thanks a lot, Justin. Really appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck moving forward, and good luck with the season and the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Y'all have a good day.
Justin Steele, Cubs left-hander. Bruce, Steele the Show is his podcast, and it's very interesting. He gets into a lot of different things, as you can hear there. Not afraid to express his opinion, and he does so pretty well.
It's, you know, it's been interesting to watch a guy who were three or four word answers 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And now being one of the more expressive, interesting lockers to go to and talk just about anything. I mean, he's it's fascinating to see the growth of an individual, the comfort level of growing into a major leaguer and also a leader on a team as you have success and failure and you're there for a while.
He is the ace of the staff, or is he? We'll talk about that next when we come back. We also have Scott Podsednik at the top of the hour, shifting to White Sox. Also, your calls and texts, 312-644-6767. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the cliche saying, like, hey, that's baseball. Do everything right, hit the ball in the nose, and don't get resulted for it. But it's kind of what happens sometimes. But that's a tough one to swallow, especially given the situation and late in the game and the kind of game deciding it would have been. But who knows how it would have played out, but yeah.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was Patrick Wisdom, Bruce. After his long, loud out in the eighth inning, would have been a two-run home run, changed a lot of things. We might have been talking a lot of different things this morning. The ball had 111 mile per hour exit velocity. I know you're into this. That a 33 degree launch angle, and it would have been out in 20 ballparks according to all the metrics involved, Bruce. So, did Patrick Wisdom get robbed, or is that just baseball?
It would have been out in 29 ballparks, except the one he was playing in yesterday. Okay. So metrically, that ball would have been a 420-foot home run anywhere else. But that
hold on. I'm editing you, Bruce. I'm checking you. Where are you getting your information? On the Cubs website,
from watching baseball for 50 years, okay, that's that's where I'm getting it from.
Okay.
The scientists don't play baseball, okay?
All right, yeah.
Scientists don't view baseball. They give you numbers and metrics. They don't include what you saw. The ball was killed, okay? You just said it went 111 miles an hour. You didn't tell me what was the wind factor blowing back, okay, that kept it from going out, all right?
Do you see meteorologists next to my name, Bruce? No. I know this.
Well, don't hit me with those numbers.
When there's a basket home run that lands just over the outstretched arm and glove of a left fielder, they don't say,
part of the ballpark.
Okay. That's baseball. I know.
Get your scientists together, my friend. All right?
My scientists are together, and they're basically telling me to stop whining because...
Listen, Oppenheimer... Try it somewhere else, okay?
All right. So the Cubs, you clearly think the Cubs got robbed then?
They didn't get robbed. If you're playing in the beautiful play yard, it's the best and the worst ballpark in the world. Okay, it's the most beautiful. It's the most unique. It's the oldest, and it also breaks your heart. From time to time, if you're a player. I've had players whose careers were altered so much by Wrigley Field, and it's the fact that you can't hit a home run to right field in April and May.
But it breaks your heart or makes your day. Because, Bruce,
yeah, but, I mean, we're talking about
it's June 15th.
I know, but the wind was blowing in a ton yesterday. So unique for June, you know. You got a warm day, a full house. Cubs, Cardinals, and the wind's blowing in from the north, okay, and blowing in plenty, and it changes the outcome of the game because of it.
Okay, you're coming off a losing streak. You're stuck in a rut. You're coming off a game where you had to bunt three times in a row to try to manufacture runs. I get the frustration, but Mother Nature does not deserve as much heat as the hitting coach, you know, in these situations. Because the
hitting coach had nothing to do with that ball not going out yesterday.
I know, but my point being that you're not hitting. Yeah, and we don't necessarily always say when the Cubs benefit from the wind blowing out. How many times do we say that? Oh boy, you know,
not this year.
they can't hit the ball in the ballpark. Period.
Not you're right. Not this year. It's been a struggle. And again, every general manager, every manager will tell you, we're not hitting. We're not hitting in situation. But at the end of the conversation, they'll say to you, as all the microphones are turned off, all the recorders are turned off, we got to hit more home runs.
Yes.
Okay? That's it. That's the game right now, you know. It's too hard to manufacture runs. It's too hard to put together teams full of guys that are converting from launch angle guys to line drive guys. We're caught in the middle, David.
I'm just saying, Bruce. Stuck. Don't lose sight of the fact that it has more to do with the ball player than the ballpark.
I'm going to tell wisdom when I go over to the clubhouse today. If you would have hit it 112 miles an hour, that ball would have gone out of the ballpark. What's wrong with you?
Let's get Ron Coomer's thought on the exit velocity, because we know Coom has thoughts on exit velocity. Why do we always hear about exit velocity on these long outs? Anyway, all right, we need to move on, because we have White Sox talk coming at the top of the hour. We have Scotty Podsednik from NBC Sports Chicago joining us next. It's Bruce Levine, David Haw, inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the cliche saying, like, hey, that's baseball. Do everything right. Hit the ball in the nose and don't get resulted for it. But it's kind of what happens sometimes. But that's a tough one to swallow, especially given the situation and late in the game and the kind of game deciding it would have been. But who knows how it would have played out. But, yeah.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was Patrick Wisdom, Bruce. After his long, loud out in the eighth inning, would have been a two-run home run, changed a lot of things. We might have been talking a lot of different things this morning. The ball had 111-mile-per-hour exit velocity. I know you're into this. That a 33-degree launch angle. And it would have been out in 20 ballparks, according to all the metrics involved, Bruce. So did Patrick Wisdom get robbed, or is that just baseball?
It would have been out in 29 ballparks, except the one he was playing in yesterday. Okay? So metrically, that ball would have been a 420-foot home run anywhere else. But
hold on. I'm editing you, Bruce. I'm checking you. Where are you getting your information? On the Cubs website,
from watching baseball for 50 years. Okay, that's that's where I'm getting it from.
Okay,
the scientists don't play baseball. Okay,
all right, yeah.
Scientists don't view baseball. They give you numbers and metrics. They don't include what you saw. The ball was killed. Okay, you just said it went 111 miles an hour. You didn't tell me what was the wind factor blowing back, okay, that kept it from going out, all right?
Do you see meteorologists next to my name, Bruce? No. I know this.
Well, don't hit me with those numbers.
When there's a basket home run that lands just over the outstretched arm and glove of a left fielder, they don't say,
part of the ballpark.
Okay. That's baseball. I know.
Get your scientists together, my friend. All right?
Listen, my scientists are together, and they're basically telling me to stop whining because...
Listen, Oppenheimer, try it somewhere else, okay?
All right, so you clearly think the Cubs got robbed then.
They didn't get robbed? If you're playing in the beautiful play yard, it's the best and the worst ballpark in the world, okay? It's the most beautiful, it's the most unique, it's the oldest, and it also breaks your heart from time to time if you're a player. I've had players whose careers were altered so much by Wrigley Field, and the fact that you can't hit a home run to right field in April and May.
But it breaks your heart or makes your day. Because, Bruce,
yeah, but I mean, we're talking about
it's June 15th.
I know, but the wind was blowing in a ton yesterday. So unique for June, you know. You got a warm day, a full house, Cubs, Cardinals, and the wind's blowing in from the north, okay, and blowing in plenty. And it changes the outcome of the game because of it.
Okay, you're coming off a losing streak. You're stuck in a rut. You're coming off a game where you had to bunt three times in a row to try to manufacture runs. I get the frustration, but Mother Nature does not deserve as much heat as the hitting coach, you know, in these situations. Because the
hitting coach had nothing to do with that ball not going out yesterday.
I know, but my point being that you're not hitting. Yeah, and we don't necessarily always say when the Cubs benefit from the wind blowing out. How many times do we say that? Oh boy, you know,
not this year.
they can't hit the ball in the ballpark. Period.
Not you're right. Not this year. It's been a struggle. And again, every general manager, every manager will tell you, we're not hitting. We're not hitting in situation. But at the end of the conversation, they'll say to you, as all the microphones are turned off, all the recorders are turned off, we got to hit more home runs.
Yes.
Okay? That's it. That's the game right now, you know? It's too hard to manufacture runs. It's too hard to put together teams full of guys that are converting from launch angle guys to line drive guys. We're caught in the middle, David.
I'm just saying, Bruce. Stuck. Don't lose sight of the fact that it has more to do with the ball player than the ballpark.
I'm going to tell Wisdom when I go over to the clubhouse today, if you would have hit it 112 miles an hour, that ball would have gone out of the ballpark. What's wrong with you?
Let's get Ron Coomer's thought on the exit velocity, because we know Coom has thoughts on exit velocity. Why do we always hear about exit velocity on these long outs? Anyway, all right, we need to move on, because we have White Sox talk coming at the top of the hour. We have Scotty Podsednik from NBC Sports Chicago joining us next. It's Bruce Levine, David Haw, inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.